Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price, exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us for courtroom coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Today, we take you to the courtroom for the first of 5 segments. Let's head there now.
Court is now in session. Judge Newman presiding.
First, I want to address the ruling yesterday, overruling the objection by the defense to the state's question of the witness on redirect as to whether he was aware of certain things that had occurred earlier on June 7th involving Mr. Murdaugh or Murdaugh Duck. In the questioning, cross-examination of the witness by Mr. Griffin, the witness was asked whether he could think of any reason, the gist of it, if he could think of any reason possible why Mr. Murdaugh would commit the crimes he's accused of committing. That, in effect, turn the cross-examination of that witness from dealing with the specific issues in the case to having that witness testify as a character witness for Mr. Murdaugh, among his other areas of inquiry was his being a loving father, a great provider, financially secure, things of that nature, all indicating an opinion by that witness as to the good character of the defendant, either through direct statements or circumstantially through the evidence that was adduced from that witness. In the court's view, that opened the door for the state to respond by asking questions, as the state did. Hence, the court overruled the objections. In addition to all of that, the objection was totally inappropriate. As the court laid out and reviewed with the parties early in the trial, that objection should be made and the legal basis stated an objection of totally inappropriate is, in the words of Judge Joe Anderson, in effect, no objection at all. That's not a legal basis for an objection. That summarizes the basis for the court's ruling on that issue as to those questions yesterday. And that character type evidence was not only sought by from Mr. Gibson, but also, was it Loving? But also Mr. Loving. And none of that really implicated Rule 404B. One, it opened the door. Number two, it's 404A type reputation questioning that the state had a right to respond to per the rules. And thirdly, it addressed an issue raised in the case by the defense. The defense in the case has primarily been the defendant has such a great character that he could not possibly have committed these offenses. That's been a general thread from opening statement throughout. In addition, the defense introduced through that witness, which was also introduced through other testimony in the case by the defendant, that the boating case was a reason for the murders to have occurred. And by the defense inquiring of the witness yesterday as to his knowledge and belief concerning, or his knowledge concerning the boating case, that likewise opened the door for the state to address that issue. And that's the basis for the court's ruling as to opening the door, introducing the boating case, and reputation type evidence that the state had a right to respond under Rule 403. yet to be addressed by the court is Rule 404 issues. And those issues will, to some degree, have to be addressed in camera. And I'm wondering if the state has other witnesses to testify as to other things, since we have the jury here ready to go, prior to addressing other those, any other.
Well, we do have a, first of all, we do have a Snapchat custodian who has flown in that we need to get in so that person can make the flight. Based on how things ended yesterday, I was prepared this morning. We were planning on going forward with some of the witnesses from the law firm, and that's going to, there's certainly stuff beyond 404, but that's also going to put some of the 404 issues squarely into play. So that's kind of where we were planning to go this morning, Your Honor, with the testimony that we have. I can certainly get some more forensic people rolling. I apologize if I sort of misread what we needed to be ready to do, but that's kind of what we focused on last night and are ready to address this morning.
Yeah, well, the court didn't have a lot of time to do jury planning issues, and it might have, you know, the jurors typically come at 9:30. It might have been a better idea had with greater thought to have them to have had them come later. And I don't know how long these issues will take to be addressed.
I think with the two law firm witnesses out of the gate, I think once the court has we could do some very focused in-camera testimony, and I think that for those witnesses, the court can then rule on what's admissible and what's not, and once that's done, then we can get underway with the jury for those witnesses and proceed accordingly. And then, of course, we can certainly have a discussion as far as other witnesses and then perhaps arrange a time to do any other in camera. But I think setting the table with these two witnesses is going to set the table for many of the issues that, you know, whether they're in or out, that the court has to decide.
All right. Well, first, as it relates to Rule 404, and Rule 404B states that evidence of other crimes or wrongs is not admissible to prove the character of a person in order to show action in conformity therewith. In other words, not admissible to show propensity to commit the crime or a crime, but it may be admitted for certain other reasons, including motive, identity, intent, and the and perhaps the existence of a common scheme or plan. Additionally, I'll address it later regarding res gestae, but my view of the evidence is that evidence of the other alleged crimes can be introduced in this case to show motive, intent, common scheme or plan. Given the proper analysis as it relates to that evidence being offered, as I indicated earlier, that the court agrees with the view and as expressed by the court in U.S. v. Siegel, 536 Federal 3rd 306, wherein the court addressed the issue of previous crimes involving, previous alleged crimes involving multiple victims, and that the state should be able to pursue its theory of proving that why suddenly or why some such tragic the motive for such a tragic an occurrence to have taken place on the dates alleged here. And under the federal rule, it goes on to say that evidence of other crimes or bad acts is necessary if it is an essential part of the crimes on trial or where it furnishes part of the context of the crime. This state has not adopted rule, that portion of Rule 404B, but the courts have addressed that issue in some of the cases, particularly one that stands out to me is one of my cases, State v. Frankie Lee McGee from Richland County, in which the res gestae was used as a basis for the courts properly allowing certain evidence, including evidence of commission of an earlier crime, the test being whether it logically relates to the crime with which the defendant is charged. Court states in that opinion under res gestae that one of the accepted basis for the admissibility of the evidence of other crimes arises when such evidence furnishes part of the context of the crime or is necessary to a full presentation of the case or is so intimately connected with and explanatory of the crime charged against the defendant and is so much a part of the setting of the case and its environment that its proof is appropriate in order to complete the story of the crime on trial by proving its immediate context or the res gestae or the uncharged offense is so linked together in point of time and circumstances with the crime charge that one cannot be fully shown without proving the other, and thus is part of the res gestae of the crime charged. And where evidence is admissible to prove this full presentation of the offense, there is no reason to fragmentize the events under inquiry by suppressing parts of the res gestae. And interestingly, involved in that case, the court held that did not require a 403 analysis. Because the evidence was properly admitted as part of the res gestae, the issue of whether or not a 404B analysis was done was not necessary. And at this point, the court hasn't addressed any particular issue under 404B, but I find that it is admissible, provided that the proper scrutiny is done in relation to clear and convincing evidence and a logical relationship to the offense for which we're having this trial. And additionally, as relates to intent, evidence tending to prove a defendant's state of mind or intent at or near the time of the crime is relevant to establish possible guilt. So there are many areas under which it's appropriate for the court to consider admitting this evidence of other crimes, other bad acts, in a manner that does not address or seek to have the jury conclude that it's propensity evidence, and the court will address all of that as we proceed.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Yes, sir, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I just want to get some arguments on the record for purposes.
Yes, sir.
As to Your Honor's conclusion that we opened the door by presenting evidence of good character, I would respectfully disagree, and the evidence that we presented was specifically limited to the relationship between the defendant and the victim for which he's accused of murdering. In our view, that is not character witness. That's a factual issue relating to the relationship between the parties. And so I just want to put that on the record. Your Honor puts great emphasis and reliance on U.S. v. Siegel, and that's a federal case. And I want to point out that the federal site is 536 F3rd 306.
F3rd, yes.
Yes, sir. And the and it's important to distinguish the federal crimes for which the defendant in Siegel was charged with. First, she was charged with murdering the victim to prevent him from reporting fraud, and that's a specific federal statute, 18 U.S.C. 1512 A1C. She's also charged with impeding an official investigation by transporting the deceased body across state lines. But further, the indictment alleged a broader scheme and artifice to defraud. And in the indictment, it listed many of the prior crimes that the defendant committed in the federal indictment. And so, and under federal rule 404B, you can prove those up. And then there were others that the court considered they were related to the whole scheme and artifice to defraud. The indictment in this case, Your Honor, is simply on June 7th, 2021, the defendant with malice aforethought murdered Ms. Maggie Murdoch, murdered Mr. Paul Murdoch, and used violent weapons in commission of those two crimes. There's no scheme and artifice to the fraud
here. You're currently addressing it as if the court ruled based on 404. And the court clearly stated that we have not reached any determination on 404 that the basis of the court's ruling was 403, the boating case, as you introduced through the witness, and opening the door to, by giving testimony, soliciting testimony of generally good character of the defendant, such that neither of the two witnesses could possibly imagine the scenario under which what would cause this crime to have occurred, and the state is entitled to confront that evidence in the manner in which the court ruled. But you're arguing 404. I cited that for an additional basis to say the court will need to look at all of that as we proceed with evidence of prior bad acts. But the basis of the court's ruling was not 404, but 403, opening the door and responding to the evidence that you adduced.
Yes, sir. I apologize. I misunderstood.
Yes, sir.
Your Honors.
I did not rule based on U.S. v. Siegel and overruling your objection yesterday.
Fair enough. I guess I would ask for clarification of where we go from here. Is your intentions to have a hearing outside the presence of the jury on their proposed 404B evidence?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then I can save all the arguments from them. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And again, with regard to planning purposes for the jury, you have, you said, a witness, whatever can be done without getting into the 404 or the court's need for an in-camera hearing, where we need to dismiss the jury for whatever period of time that might be, we can press on with what you have otherwise at this time, and whatever that is what we'll hear.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Like I say, we have one short custodian, and then I think our next witness who's here would be somebody where we would need to address some of the 404. That would be Jeannie Seckinger from the law firm. If you give me one moment, I can to confer with my staff, and we can see if we can get some other people rolling so that we can kind of stagger that and continue to have presentations for the jury during the course of the day.
All right.
Rise and come to order.
Yes, sir.
Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir. We do have, again, that custodian witness. Then I think we would have to, we are rolling some additional witnesses, but I think at that time we would have to break and do at least the first in-camera witness. Again, I think that may set the table for a lot of subsequent things. And then we can have some additional work outside of any 404 stuff in the afternoon, Your Honor. But certainly happy to do that, or if you want, we can put up some multiple witnesses on the in-camera here today.
So I think as it relates to each alleged bad act, it must be, the court must be informed and proper and addressed separately. Of course, some may be a series of things occurring almost simultaneously, so that may be a different scenario. But we'll see how it goes. We're ready to proceed with the jury.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
The jury is present, sir.
All right, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back. Day number 9. State's case. You may call your next witness.
Thank you. State call Heidi Galore.
Raise your right hand. Yes, I'm on the Bible. You affirm the testimony about to give the court in this trial shall be the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please take a seat in the witness stand. State your name again for the record. Spell your last name, please.
My name is Heidi Galore. Last name is spelled G-A-L-O-R-E.
Police court. Good morning.
Police court. Where do you work?
Morning. I work for Snap Incorporated.
What are your duties there?
I'm an law enforcement operations lead. So I assist with and help manage a team of folks who respond to law enforcement legal process. Our team responds to legal process submitted to our company, subpoenas, search warrants, that kind of thing.
All right. So you're in charge of responding to search warrants or subpoenas from law enforcement or other legal entities?
Correct.
All right. And briefly, please, what is Snapchat?
Snapchat, it's an application that was created by Snap Incorporated to help people express themselves. People can connect to their friends, people they know, and I guess you could consider it a social networking type of application.
Is social media another word that could be used for Snapchat?
Yes.
Does it give the ability for individuals to send each other messages?
Yes.
Does it give the ability for individuals to send each other pictures or videos?
Yes.
In the normal course of its business, does Snapchat keep records if the user so chooses?
Yes.
What kind of records does Snapchat keep?
Basic subscriber information, content that was sent to and from folks, IP logs, geolocation, depending on the settings of the user.
Okay. I'm going to show you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 305 and 304. I'm going to ask if you recognize these two items.
I do, yes.
And what are you holding?
The paper here is the basic subscriber information for the user that was produced in the search warrant.
And what's that CD?
The CD contains the full production of files that was sent to your agency requested from the search warrant.
All right, and that was a search warrant from SLED?
Yes.
That Snapchat responded to?
Correct.
Okay. And you said there was subscriber information on that piece of paper, correct?
Yes.
And is that also located on the CD in the digital record?
Yes, yes.
I'm going to go back to you real quick. And Your Honor, at this time, State will move these injunctions.
No objection, Your Honor.
They're admitted without objection.
I'm going to hand you back State's 304. And you said you indicated that was subscriber information. Is that correct?
Correct.
Can you read for the jury the subscriber information for the information on the account that you provided in response to the search warrant?
Sure. The username is listed here. The username is listed here as Paul9499. Common spelling for Paul. The email address listed here is paulmurdaugh7845@gmail.com. This was created, the account was created on Saturday, May 18th, 2013. There's a creation IP, but it's not listed here. Sometimes it's captured at the time of creation of the account. This case, it doesn't seem to be. Phone number listed here is 803-842-7845. Display name is listed as Paul Murdaugh, and the status is active.
Okay. And when somebody uses a telephone number, for example, to create a Snapchat account, does Snapchat verify that number?
If the user wants to verify the phone number, yes, they can, but it's not required.
Okay, and what about the email? Is that required?
Not required either, no.
All right, I'm gonna hand you State's Exhibit 306. This is already in evidence, and I believe this is a CD. Do you recognize that CD?
Yes, I do.
And have you reviewed the contents of that CD?
Yes, I have.
And what is on the contents of that CD?
It's a video of a subject near a tree, and it's a short video with some audio.
All Okay, and did that video, was that part of the full search warrant return that we just talked about?
Yes.
All right, and did you take a look at that video and the records contained in the other CD to determine when that video was first uploaded and first sent?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's talk about the upload. Was it uploaded to something called Memories?
Yes.
And can you describe to the jury, what is Memories? What is that function with Snapchat?
Memories is kind of like a bucket where you can save your data. You can either create a video or some sort of photo on the app itself and save it to your memories so that it's always there when you need it. Or you can upload from your camera, your phone, into Memories to then send to folks later or just have it in there.
So is that a form of saving something in the cloud?
Correct, yes. It'll be on the server.
All right. And in reviewing these records, did you determine when this account uploaded that particular video to Memories?
Yes. This video was first seen on Memories on June 7th, 2021 at 7:39 hours.
Okay.
Eastern.
And did the Snapchat also keep a record when an individual sends out a communication?
Yes.
And did you determine, reviewing the records, whether that account sent out that particular video?
Yes, it was sent on the same day, June 7th, 2021 at 7:56 hours Eastern Time.
All right, thank you. And I'm going to show you, if you look at your monitor in front of you, and I'm gonna show you State's Exhibit 306 and see if you recognize it. And did you recognize that video?
It didn't show up on the...
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we get the... get on the screen? My apologies. Oops. Okay. What's going on? Try it again. Can you see the what's on your screen right now?
Yes.
All right. And I'm going to play that one more time. Okay. And do you recognize that video, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
All right. And is that video the video we just discussed that was part of the Snapchat search warrant return?
Yes.
That you just testified was uploaded at 7:39 p.m. and sent at 7:56 p.m.?
Yes.
No further questions.
Good morning, ma'am.
Morning.
Can we pull up the Snapchat video, just have it frozen on a screenshot? So this is what, or part of what Snapchat gave to the state on July 6th, is that, of 2021, is that correct?
Correct.
So the state had this on July 6th, 2021 in the state's possession?
I believe so, yes.
This information. And you testified that this was uploaded at 7:39 p.m. on the 7th of June, correct?
Correct.
Is that exactly when this video was shot?
I can't tell that information from the production.
Are you certain that's not something that could be tilled from the perhaps the metadata for the video file?
There was no metadata produced for this production. It wasn't requested, so it wasn't produced.
So if someone were to right-click on this video file and you know where it has various metadata that pops up on the screen, would we see a media created date?
I don't know.
Well,
I
let's
know.
Let's see if we would. Court's indulgence for a moment. Can you see on the screen the metadata for this file?
Yes.
And does it say June the 7th, 2021 at 7:38 p.m.?
Yes.
And so this was shot basically a minute before it was uploaded, is that correct?
It appears so, yeah.
And I'm sorry if that seems picky, but in this case, you know, every minute and every second, you know, can matter. Does Snapchat keep a list of, and I might be getting the terminology wrong, friends or contacts that Paul would have had on Snapchat?
Yes.
Was that list produced?
No.
And why was that list not produced?
It wasn't requested in this case.
And you mentioned earlier geolocation data. Was that produced?
No, not in this case.
And why was that not produced?
I don't believe it was requested.
Is it possible for, I don't know how it works, for some or all of Paul's friends to have access to his location through the app?
Yes, if his settings were, if he made his settings visible, his geolocation visible to his friends, yes.
And would that information about whether that was that setting was in place to allow that, is that something that Snapchat would have had available to produce?
I'm not sure about that. If we can see that it's actually turned on or off.
Yeah. Was that requested?
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
By the state.
No, I'm not supposed to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May step down. Yes, sir.
The state's next witness would be Jeannie Seckinger.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, there are matters that must be addressed outside of your presence. I do not know exactly how long it would take, but I do not like to have jurors sit in jury rooms just for long periods of time. So we're going to excuse you after you speak with the bailiff. We're going to take a recess with the jury while we deal with these matters. Let's see now, you all have lunch coming at what time? Nobody knows. 1 o'clock, 1:15. All right, well, we won't need you before lunch. So if you'll go to the jury room and wait for further instructions, but we'll be having you all take a break until around that time. Proceed.
All right, again, the state would call Jeannie Seckinger.
You take a seat in the witness stand. State your name again for the record. Spell your last name.
My name is Jeannie Seckinger, S-E-C-K-I-N-G-E-R.
Ms. Seckinger, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good. Let me fix the Selma real quick. You understand we're here right now outside the presence of the jury for an in-camera hearing to determine the admissibility of some of your testimony.
I do.
And just very quickly, if you would, give us a little bit. I'm not going to go through all the background that I went in front of the jury unless Your Honor would like, but give us a little bit about your background and where you currently work, how that led to where you currently work.
Okay. I graduated with a BS in accounting from USC, went to work in an accounting firm for a few years, then switched to industrial at Westinghouse. And in 1999, I came to work at PMPD, which is Peters Murdock Parker, as a temporary bookkeeper, and that has grown over the years to the office manager, CFO, accountant, anything business and insurance and HR related.
Okay, and that's for whom?
For Peters Murdock Parker, Elstroth and Dietrich.
All right, so that's PMPD?
Correct.
And that's the law firm that Alec Murdock used to work for?
Correct.
Does that have a different name now?
We are now a new entity that's called Parker Law Group, LLP.
All right, so just very quickly, you've already kind of said this, but go through sort of the financial side of your job duties as it existed for PMPD back in the relevant time periods.
Okay, so my financial duties are, actually I have people under me that do the day-to-day processing of checks, but my duties are to balance and reconcile accounts, provide financial statements, help with all tax documents, preparation of taxes, also prepared anything for any government census or surveys that we needed and anything HR related.
I want to ask you a little bit about the financial structure of how PMPD worked, if I could. And if you could explain that a little bit. People often think of lawyers as partners, but are they called partners under the employment agreement that everyone signed?
No, we're called partners when we refer to each other as they're in the business, but for tax purposes, everybody was an owner. It was a C corporation, so everybody's shareholders. And within Peters Murdock Parker, every employee was a salaried employee, including the partners.
Okay. And did the employment agreement that everyone signed require that any fees or money generated by any partner or lawyer by the firm had to go to the firm?
It did.
And explain to me how, if you're let's just call them quote partner, if you're a partner, how does the compensation work? What are the elements of compensation as it worked under the PMPD structure back in 2021 and prior?
So every partner received a base salary that they would receive in biweekly payments throughout the year. That was set at a level of about $125,000. The majority of their pay came through an end of the year bonus, which is when we closed out the books and settled on the books. And primarily, after overhead and over expenses were met, the net profit was divided amongst those partners. And in a simplified form, it was basically distributed based on a ratio of the fees that they brought in percentage to the total.
Right. But that distribution would not take place until when?
Usually the last week of December.
Yes, sir.
Waters, there's a strike. Can you repeat the previous question for me?
Yes, sir. Going back, Ms. Seckinger, we were talking a little bit about the compensation structure for PMPD as it existed in 2021. And if you could, again, explain to the court how that worked. How are partners, and we're going to call them loosely that term, how are they compensated?
Okay. Partners are employed salaries who are paid a biweekly paycheck throughout the year with a base salary of $125,000. And at the end of the year, they received a bonus check, usually in the last week of the year, that divided up the remaining profits of the firm based upon the percentage of revenue each attorney brought in to the total.
All right, so when fees came in, they're going to be attributed to a particular lawyer, and ultimately that's going to be a percentage of the total revenues, and that's going to determine their percentage of the compensation at the end of the year after all overhead is paid.
Correct.
Is there also some sort of 7.5% fund or fee or something like, or not, or amount that's put aside?
There is. You would take the gross bonuses that are the gross fees everybody brought in, less an overhead, and once we get to that number, everybody would throw in a pot 7.5%, and that money was divided back equally among the employees. And then a new percentage was arrived at to determine how much everybody would receive of the net income.
All right, so you have to take care of overhead, right?
Yes.
And what is an overhead, just generally?
Overhead is just basically the expenses to run the business, what it costs us to advance client costs, what it costs to pay our employees, what it costs to rent the building, to provide equipment, office supplies, postage, et cetera.
Right. And that's got to be accounted for, and then you got to account for the 7.5% that as well, correct?
That's right.
All right, and then only after that does each partner get compensation based on their relative contribution during that year.
Correct.
Is the vast majority of compensation received by a partner at PMPD received in that distribution at the end of the year?
Yes.
And when does that take place?
The last week of the year, generally speaking.
Okay. And what is the point of that goal? Why do you want to sort of clear out all the money and clear the books?
So basically, we don't want to leave the money in there to be taxed by the corporation because it's a C-corp entity, so the objective is to get it out to the partners and avoid double taxation.
And so because of that, is it up to each individual partner to essentially manage the bulk of their compensation that's received in one lump sum during the course of the next year?
Yes, they need a budget.
All right, let me show you what's been marked for purposes of this hearing as States 310 and see if you recognize that document.
Yes, this is the employment agreement each shareholder slash partner would have signed.
Okay, and I just want to direct your attention to number two, and if you could tell court what that provision that's signed by all the partners says.
It says the employee accepts such employment and agrees that the employee will devote the employee's entire time and endeavor to the employer's business.
All right. And then number three, if you could read that to the court, please.
Services for the benefit of the employer. All professional services rendered by the employer shall be rendered as an employee of the employer, and all proceeds and remuneration received, therefore, shall inure to the employer's benefit.
Okay. Now tell me what that means.
That means that all fees earned should come through payable to PMPD.
All right. And so if a lawyer earns fees, is it appropriate at all for those fees to go directly to the lawyer as opposed to going through the law firm?
No.
Is that a hard rule to understand?
No.
Anybody ever have a problem with that rule or not understand it?
No.
Pretty easy and hard and fast rule in that firm, correct?
That's right.
If you get the money written straight to you, what is that?
The money's taken straight to you?
Yeah.
That would be stealing it.
Stealing it. Have the element, please, and could y'all turn the screen for me? All right, so, is that better? So, could you see that, Ms. Seconder?
Yes.
All right, so two and three are the provisions you were just referring to?
That's correct.
Tell me just a little bit of your observation. How long have you known Alec Murdoch? Let me ask you that.
I've known Alec since I was in high school, so roughly 40 years.
Okay. And how long have you worked with him, or did you work with him?
About 23, 24 years, since 1999.
And did he have a lucrative practice in your observation?
Yes, he did well.
Was he sometimes getting as much as seven figures in the end of the year?
He has.
Are you familiar with what's been called the boat case?
Yes.
And tell me what your understanding of the boat case is, just generally. What was that?
Generally speaking, it was an accident that several children got in one evening where it was in Paul's, or the Murdoch's boat. Paul was accused as the driver, and there were a lot of civil suits and some criminal proceedings going on related to that crime.
And following the boat case, is it your understanding that Paul Murdoch was charged?
Yes.
Is it your understanding that Alec Murdoch was civilly sued?
Yes.
And there was ongoing civil litigation at the time Paul and Maggie were murdered?
That's correct.
After the boat case happened, did you and Alec ever have any discussions about structuring fees?
We did. We did in late May of 2021, right about the end of the month. We had some discussions about Hirschberger. A disbursement came through that he had tried to send his fees to a structured settlement. And the conversation was that he had done it improperly, because to structure fees properly, it has to be part of the release. It has to go straight from the insurance company, straight to the structured annuity place. And we would need to be told about it in our firm so we could account for it in our 7.5%. But in this particular case, Alec had sent the money directly to Forge. We discussed the fact that it would not be any tax benefit to him. And at that point in time, he said he was not really worried about the tax benefit of it. And he said he was trying to put some money in Maggie's name due to the boat wreck, and that he was trying to figure out if he was going to structure fees for the future.
Okay. Did he say he was trying to do a favor for anyone too?
He did say he was friends with Michael Gunn, and who is the owner of, or one of the operators of Forge, and that he was going to try to put up to about $250,000 into a structure as a favor for Michael Gunn.
All right, when you say Forge, what are you talking about?
So Forge is a company that does structured annuities.
Can you have the full name real quick?
It's Forge Consulting.
All right, let's call it Forge Consulting.
Okay, Forge Consulting.
All right, tell me about Forge Consulting and what they are.
They're a company that will do structured annuities for clients. They'll do structured fees for attorneys. They do some wealth management. They do minor pool trust. They have several different things that they do. I think they've branched out into insurance coverage now. They provide a lot of financial tools.
Now, when you say that you had a conversation with him about him supposedly structuring fees, how did this come to your attention?
It came to my attention over the fact that a disbursement, one of my secretaries or my assistant brought to me, that had been brought to her attention by Alec's secretary or paralegal Annette Griswold, and came and asked me if this was proper, and then came to me after the fact, and that's when I went and had conversations with Alec about this.
Okay. And so had the money already been paid?
Yes.
And you went to Alec and you asked, what's this about?
Yes.
And he said, I'm doing what?
I'm trying to defer and put money into Maggie's name, structure some fees.
Did he tell you where that money had gone? What was your belief where that money had gone after you talked to Alec?
My belief was it had gone to Forge Consulting.
The real entity, Forge Consulting.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to show you just real quick what's been marked for purposes of this hearing as States 311 and see if you recognize that series. I think there's four documents in there.
Yes, these are the Hershberger settlement documents, which is the case that we're talking about, the fee that he sent as a structure.
Okay. And are there one or two in there ultimately?
There are ultimately two. There's one that's structured to look like fee, and then the other one was structured to look like it was client's money that was being sent on the client's behalf.
Which one were you aware of at the time?
I was aware of the fee one for the $83,333.33.
All right. At the time, did you think that any money had been misappropriated or stolen, or did you just think Alec was trying to sort of divert some money because of the boat case, but not necessarily anything misappropriated at that time?
We were not thinking about him misappropriating funds or stealing any client funds. What we were concerned about was he was trying to either defer income by leaving it in somebody's trust or either trying to put some money into Maggie's name to avoid things for the boat accident.
And when you say we were concerned, who's concerned?
Myself and some of the partners.
And why are y'all concerned about him potentially trying to put money in a structure or in Maggie's name because of the boat case?
Well, because that would be wrong and we did not want any part of that.
All right. Let me put this up on the screen real quick. All right. Do you recognize this document right here?
Excuse me. Yes, that's the document that is in question with the $83,333.33 fee sent to Forge.
All right. And right there, tell me what this disbursement sheet is very quickly. Explain that to the court.
So this is where the client recovered $250,000. You can see it came from three different insurers. And we would take a portion of our fee. Generally, this looks like a third, and our expenses of $9,300. the Sedgwick claims would have been a lien that we were playing off, and then the $140,678.55 would have been the money dispersed between the beneficiaries of that estate.
And what is this line right here?
That would represent the fee.
All right. At this point in time, had you actually seen the check that was that was made out for those fees?
I don't recall if I actually looked at it at that point in time.
And normally fees, where would they go?
Normally, fees would come to us and we would deposit into our income account, what we call our income account.
Okay. So fees come in from somebody who pays a settlement. Where do they go initially?
What account
do they go in?
To the income account, the PMPD operating income account.
Okay. Fees go in there?
Yes.
All right. When a settlement comes in, where does it go?
It goes into a client trust account for the benefit of the client.
And then the portion of that is allocated for fees, it goes from the trust account to where?
To the income account.
Okay. It usually doesn't go out to Forge Consulting or anything like that?
No.
After you had that conversation with Alec, did you follow up any more on the matter?
We had a couple of conversations about it in relation to when we were having some other conversations, but we didn't really readdress this again until late August, early September.
Did you kind of put it on the back burner?
I did. I was at that point, it had been done, and I was trying to figure out how we were going to account for it on our books, and just kind of had it out there as a reminder to try to see, to put in my mind later to see if anything else had been done like that or to see if he was going to try to do that again.
After that particular event, you said that was in late May sometime?
You're right.
Did another matter come to your attention about disbursements as it related to Alec Murdoch's practice and his business?
It did.
And tell me what that was, please.
So this was a case called the Ferris versus Mack Truck case. And on a Monday, I believe it was May 24th, Annette Griswold called me and said that she had something she needed to discuss with me. I was out of the office that day in our Waldorf office, but when I returned, we met. And when she showed me what had happened was we received a check for our client expenses. So this case was actually dispersed by the associated attorney, which was Chris Wilson. So he sent us a check for the money that we had forwarded as client expenses, but we did not receive a fee check. And that in itself is odd generally.
Why is that odd? Why did Annette call you? Because y'all had received a fee check from Alec's best friend, Chris Wilson, but not the expense check, but not the fee check.
Right. Most of the time we receive them together. Well, Annette, when she did not receive them together, called my assistant Nicole to make sure we had not already received the fee, verified that we had not already received the fee, and at that point Annette had some conversations with Vicki Lyman in Chris's office. And Vicki informed Chris that their bosses had already got the fee when the settlement was signed, which had happened in March, and this was May.
And Vicki informed Chris or Vicki informed Annette?
Vicki informed Annette of that.
All right. So why is that a concern to you that now you're hearing the fee's already been paid?
Because now we know we don't have the check. We've never received it. So either he's got a fee, either he's got a check he hasn't turned into us that is properly payable to PMPD, or he's received a check payable to him.
All right. And when you were considering the possibility that he perhaps received a check payable to him, aside from that being stealing, as you earlier testified to it, what's your concern then?
Saying that he's trying to hide money from the boat wreck.
Hide money from the boat wreck. All right, stand by for me.
That wraps up segment one of coverage in the Alec Murdoch trial for today, the first of five that we will have for you in sequential order here on the podcast feed. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of the updates, breaking updates, and conversations on the case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.